Hello and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalbot. I'll be here with Josh and Henry discussing all the good and bad about Arsenal Football Club. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to episode 25 of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name's Andrew. I'm here with Henry and Josh as usual. And for the second time in less than a week, we are coming to you after a Arsenal victory. What in the world is going on, boys? I don't know what's happened. The world is weird. Arsenal are winning. Josh, did you enjoy the game on Sunday?
I really did. It's strange to feel so joyous one after another. I forgot what it felt like to actually not have fears over what kind of sadness would overtake me from Arsenal, because there's been no sadness lately. It's like you said, it's all strange, very strange.
Someone tweeted after it. I think they tweeted before the Milan game, about 7 or 8 hours before the Milan game, saying, "Oh, I've got to watch Arsenal tonight. I'll look forward to being depressed in 10 hours." And then they retweeted their own tweet after the game, saying, "Oh, I feel happy. This is weird. I'm not used to this feeling. Where's the pit of despair gone? This is weird." Henry, did you enjoy the game on Sunday?
Yeah, I did. I mean, it wasn't always convincing, but I'm glad that we came out with the victory. It feels so easy and I'm so at peace and so at ease. It's a very weird feeling.
Yeah. I guess it helped that it was a bit meaningless, just because that meant that nobody really gave a damn if we actually... I think as long as there was some good football played and Arsenal kind of... It felt like one of those end of the season... at home,
last day of term kind of days.
Yeah, it felt like one of them, even though we're only in March, not May. I guess that kind of tells you how Arsenal season going, really, isn't it? That a game in early March can feel like an end of season game, but there we go. To discuss the game today, we thought about different ways of doing this, and essentially, of all the topics we wanted to talk about, we basically thought, well, why don't we just run through the players? We'll have a chat about how they did, about whether we think they played well, whether they perhaps overstepped the mark in certain areas, whether they defied expectations or whether they let us down a little bit. And then out of that, I assume various different topics of discussion will come. So we'll start probably with the man of the moment, Josh, and Petr Cech. What did you make of his performance? And as we've been banging on about for donkey's years on here, he has his 200th clean sheet. That's amazing.
I was so happy for him, but I mean, 200 clean sheets is one thing, but to get it while stoning Troy Deeney, of all people,
and showing stones in doing so.
Yes, it was like killing every evil monkey that's ever plagued him. Everything that's ever been on his back is gone. And I made this semi audacious prediction that from here on out, it's going to be peak Petr Cech for the rest of his days at Arsenal. He's never going to have a worry in the world. He's going to be and nobody's going to score a penalty on him. He's never going to hesitate. It's going to be gorgeous. This is a realistic prediction. Totally realistic.
Very realistic. He did. I mean, that he even so, there were a couple of moments where I thought, I'm not sure he did very, like, you know, from the free kick where he palmed it. The commentary, the Sky Sports commentary properly laid into him. They were like, "That's a terrible piece of goalkeeping." I was like, "It's a quite a good save. Like, it's not. It's just not brilliant goalkeeping. It's just it's perhaps a little bit naive, which is odd coming from a 35-year-old incredibly experienced goalkeeper." What did you make of Cech's performance, Henry? And are you happy that he has reached two milestones of a first penalty saved and the 200th clean sheet?
I mean, he's a Premier League legend, and we're lucky to have him in goal for us. I mean, that doesn't change my view that we should replace him in the summer, but we're fortunate to have him regardless. I thought he made some timely saves. He obviously kept a clean sheet, saved the penalty. I still thought some of his distribution was awful at times. but yeah, I'm happy with him. I'm content with him between the sticks, and I'm glad that that's, that monkey's off his back, I guess.
Well, that I agree. I agree. And I do definitely think that he said after the game that the penalty thing he didn't think about the penalty thing. He definitely thought about
the
penalty.
Yeah, it was written in the stars.
No
as
way
as
in hell
he saved
he
that
didn't
penalty.
Think about the penalty.
You just knew there was no goal going in, and it was weird. Once he saved that penalty, you had the biggest cheer of the game, and it seemed that Arsenal got a kickstart out of that penalty, Dave, like a goal almost. Mm. It was very weird.
He was so desperate to keep that clean sheet. I've not seen a man, I've not seen, certainly an Arsenal player, because they'd never like to win things. I've not seen an Arsenal player more desperate to do anything than Petr Cech keep that clean sheet. It was quite amusing. There was a moment where, like, the ball spilled loose in the box. It was about 5 minutes left, and everybody kind of switched off because, you know, the game was over at this point. And Cech came hurtling out of his goal, just absolutely desperate to jump himself on the ball just so nobody could score. He was just like, he's hell-bent on not conceding a goal. Which, in fairness, I think it's Newcastle, wasn't it, in December, the last time he kept a clean sheet in the Premier League. I think I remember reading that somewhere. It's something like 11 games, which is pretty depressing. And for his penalty, 11 games in a 1-0 winning Newcastle. His penalty, that's the 16th penalty that he's faced for Arsenal. His last one that he saved, do you know when his last one was that he saved? 2011, February 2011. 7 years ago, he's not saved a penalty in 7 years. That's atrocious. That's terrible.
How many penalties has he faced in that time? So he's faced 16 at Arsenal.
He's faced 16 at Arsenal, and then however many he's faced at Chelsea, and then he retired quite early, but he may have even faced one or two for the Czech Republic as well.
I mean, you have to consider the fact that Courtois came back from Atletico Madrid and beat him out for that number one jersey for a while at Chelsea, didn't he? And then he came to us, so I'm not sure how much that has to play into things.
No, that's true. But still, 7 years. That's a keeper saving a penalty maybe twice in his career.
But that's like Saido Berahino not scoring a goal for a couple of years, isn't it?
Yeah, that is.
I wish he'd gone to Tottenham. It'd have been so funny.
But credit to Petr Cech, he got what he deserved, I think. And the penalty save was a deceptively good save, I think, because the penalty was bad. But it's often those bad penalties that go in because the keeper commits to dive into the left or the right, and the ball just kind of goes over his legs. So he actually did quite well to adjust his hand to get back and parry it clear. Mm. So well done to Petr Cech. Of the back four on the day, Josh, and I'll include Callum Chambers, I know he only played 20 minutes or so. So of the back four or five who played, who was the most impressive for you on the day? And were any of them a little bit disappointing in your eyes as well?
I mean, Mustafi was tremendous. I thought, again, it kind of just falls into the realm of Mustafi where you could get really, really, really good games like this. I was going to give a man of the match until he got subbed early for his injury because he was getting knocked around all day. I've never seen a defender get fallen on his head so often. Like, he's had two people fall on his head in as many days, I think. Because it was Ospina last time, and this time it was, I forget who, but somebody fell on his head again.
I think it was Decore who got him with a knee or something.
Yeah. No, he was fantastic. Rob Holding, except for that one pass there at the end where he essentially played a through ball in for a while. I forget who he played it for, but that was horrible. But he was good aside from that. And I like Maitland-Niles. I'm glad that he got to play on the right side. I don't think he was the greatest thing ever, but he did have a good game. And same with Kolasinac. I continue to think that he's sort of inching closer to getting into his best form. I wouldn't say that he had like a major step against Watford. I think he could have done better, but he was still plenty adequate. And I mean, for a guy that's still trying to find his feet again, I'm happy with how everyone performed. And Callum Chambers was great again. He didn't, like you said, he didn't have much time, but I still believe that Chambers too is Premier League ready. I would put him right up there in the same class as Mustafi and Koscielny with less proof, but I believe if you put him in there and give him more responsibility, he'd handle it just fine.
I thought Kolasinac, I actually thought this was a better performance from Kolasinac just because there was less variance in it. So he didn't, it wasn't 1 minute where he'd get the ball and do something incredible and the next minute he'd you know, set them up for a goal. Mm. It was a bit steadier, which for a player, he's clearly talented, but, you know, when we talk about this all the time with Arsenal, consistency is king, and for Kolasinac, this was a more consistent, if less spectacular, performance than in recent weeks.
Yeah, he seemed more reserved almost. I wonder if Arsene Wenger had a word and said, you need to just focus on the the basics before you do all the other stuff. I don't know. I mean, I agree. He was less prominent in the match, but that's not always a bad thing for a defender, especially. Mm.
Yeah, I agree. What did you make of the back four, Henry? Did you think they played well? Was there anyone who stood out for you?
I mean, I was very excited to see both Maitland-Niles and Holding play. I thought Holding did very well, considering it was his first Premier League start since January. I thought he was solid. I loved the fact that it seemed every time Troy Deeney got the ball, there was one or two Arsenal players or one or two Arsenal defenders always around him, kicking him, giving him grief. I loved that. I love the fact that Rob Holding at one point seemed to get engaged with Troy Deeney a la Diego Costa. I'm a big fan of Maitland-Niles. I love his composure on the ball, but that's almost his biggest drawback as well. But on the whole, I thought that both he and Kolasinac were both steady and efficient. And as you said, that's sometimes more than adequate in games like this. And Mustafi, for me, it's a case of if I don't hear his name in commentary, I think it's a good game for him. That's the kind of analysis I'm now going to give Mustafi. If I don't hear his name more than five times, I'm more than happy.
Yeah. I liken it very much. I used to play rugby as a kid, and I realised we're losing every non-English person or British person at this point. But I used to play rugby as a kid, and I was a forward. And our coach used to say, I don't want to see you in this game. I literally don't want to see you. I want to see you at the bottom of every ruck. I don't want to see you touch the ball. I want you to do all the dirty work. I never want to hear your name called. And actually, he's completely right in the sense that the same thing could be said for Mustafi, where defending should be boring.
Yeah.
Like, at his heart, the best defenders, nothing happens. That's basically the secret to defending is nothing happens. And with Mustafi, far too much happens. It's far too active. There's far too much going
erratic,
on.
Erratic, yeah.
Sometimes, like on Sunday, I thought he was very good as well. Because, again, nothing really happened. You know, those balls were played into Deeney. He didn't really do anything with it. Watford put quite a lot of crosses into the box. And they actually had quite a lot of pressure on Arsenal, especially in the final few minutes of the first half and the first 10, 15 minutes of the second half. They probably dominated the game, really, for that middle half an hour. And I thought Mustafi repelled them really well.
I mean, I was glad, more than anything, obviously, that I didn't hear his name throughout the entirety of the game, for the most part. But with Maitland-Niles, I was happy just to see that we had another competent attacking outlet on that right-hand side. I mean, Callum Chambers has played there in recent weeks, and he's done fine. But he's obviously more defensive in nature, and I like the fact that I know that Maitland-Niles would prefer to play in midfield in his natural position, but his versatility right now is what's getting him games. And I think he should just continue in this vein. If he continues to perform like this, he'll get more game time, and he'll likely get more game time in midfield.
I do wonder if right back is actually his best position for his future, for the rest of his career. I just think we've seen him struggle with his awareness at times in midfield and his almost over composure on the ball.
Yeah,
I wonder if that extra couple of yards of space that he gets at right back, and obviously his speed and real athleticism, I wonder if it's slightly better suited to a wide role.
I mean, was it you, Andy, that wrote an article recently about the fact that it's his complacency in terms of everything, not only in possession, but his athleticism as well?
Yeah.
I mean, I completely agree with it. I mean, I wouldn't mind him being a right back, because there were times yesterday where he covered very well for his central defenders. He obviously has the athleticism to play there. He obviously has the attacking impetus to play at right back as well. It's required in the modern game. I would not be opposed to that idea whatsoever. It would tick off something that we would have to do in the summer before the summer even arrived if we were to say to him, right, I know it's not where you'd want to play, but this is where you're more likely to get games. Take it or leave it.
Yeah, I don't think it'd be a bad thing. And to be honest, based on his performance on Sunday, he's better than Hector Bellerin at the moment, which, you know, I like Hector Bellerin, but obviously it's one game and there's a long way to go, but he looked better on Sunday than Bellerin has in any game for the past well, 6 months really, to be honest. So certainly I believe he could push him. I don't think Wenger will ever actually make that switch, but it's something to keep an eye on, that's for sure. Moving into the midfield, we'll start with Elneny and Xhaka. Josh, how do you think the two got on? It's not really a pair that tends to do that well together, but I thought they were pretty good.
I thought they were fantastic. And like you said, this is not a really inspiring pair. Neither one of them has that much athleticism or that much dynamism, but I thought they were both fantastic. I mean, this is, what, like five in a row now where Xhaka has been really above anything that I could have even expected. And the reason why I want to draw attention to that is because he's been doing it in different midfield setups game after game. He hasn't had the same thing twice. He's done where he was the back of a three, where he was a box-to-box in a three, where he was paired with Ramsey. Now he's been paired with Elneny. And each time he maintains that same standard, that same level of consistency, which is one of the main problems we've had with him, is his lack of versatility. We knew what he could do. He could pass. That's what he does really well. He can use his strength to shield the ball. That's what he does. But in these five games or so, even whenever it got bad, he's showing that he can do more than that, and he can do it in different setups, which I never expected to see. I don't know what all of a sudden switched with him, and I want to believe this is going to continue, but obviously we don't know if it will or not. But yeah, Elneny was great too. I mean, we always say you know what you're going to get out of him. He's not going to really change anything, but he's sort of a controlling presence, and I thought he hardly had a bad touch at all. I can't really think of any mistakes that he made, so I thought it was a fantastic midfield setup. Now, I don't think it's anything we should invest in going forward. I don't think that facing tougher teams that's going to be much of a midfield presence, but I don't think that this is some sort of long-term investment. I think it was just, you know, Watford or mid-table. They don't have much to play for, and let's get our guys some minutes, and they bolted really well.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think any conclusion drawn from this game should be taken with a rather hefty grain of salt, just because while Watford probably were the better team for significant portions of the match, actually they weren't very good. They didn't really play very well, and a lot of their play was kind of safe and conservative, but they never really created that much, and Arsenal were never under that much pressure, and there was a definite lack of intensity in this game where drawing meaningful conclusions might belie the genuine accuracy of somebody's performance, in the sense that there wasn't that same up-tempo, real energy to a normal Premier League game that you would see against, say, one of the better teams. Like you say, Xhaka and Elneny were fine in this game, but if you were to put them up against the Liverpool midfield or the United midfield or even, say, like the Leicester midfield or something like that, I don't think the results would necessarily be the same. Henry, what did you make of the duo's performance?
I agree with a lot of what Josh said. Elneny was my man of the match. I don't think, as Josh said, I don't think he put a foot wrong. Xhaka, I think he's getting a little better from a defensive standpoint each and every game at the moment. I saw him track runners. There was one blip where, from the free kick, he didn't track the runners. I mean, essentially no one did from the free kick, and they had an opportunity where they should have scored. But Elneny's a weird one, and I've been saying a lot about Nacho Monreal's consistency in recent weeks and how we need more players like him, players who give us 6, 7 out of 10 performances on a weekly basis. And the more I think about Elneny, I've previously called for him to be sold because I previously deemed him as limited, whereas now I'm beginning to look at him in a new light in terms of every time I see him play, he is a 6 or a 7 out of 10. I agree with the notion that he shouldn't be chosen to play against teams like United, Liverpool, the top 6. But like Danny Welbeck, like Nacho Monreal, or actually those two aren't who I wanted in that sentence, Danny Welbeck is a squad player. I think Elneny would be a fantastic squad player, someone worthy of keeping around, because every time he plays, he puts in consistent, solid performances.
Yeah, I agree. I still think I would have rather seen Coquelin stay, not Elneny, just because he's more different to the other midfielders that Arsenal already have. Mm. But if in keeping either of them, I think they both have value to the team.
Oh, certainly.
In terms of that consistent, dead on, I'm going to give you a 6, 7 out of 10 every time, and you know exactly what you're going to get. And those players, I mean, we'll talk about this for years with Arsenal. The variance in their performances, both individually and collectively, is just ridiculous. Yeah. So having players like Monreal and El Nene being able to perform within their range of performances is quite slim, then that's a definite positive, a definite good thing to be able to build upon. I do want to touch on slightly the general midfield balance when the Arsenal play a 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3. I think, so in this game, Arsenal played 4-2-3-1 with Ozil as the central attacking midfielder. I have a feeling that the team looks more balanced when Ozil plays out wide, usually on the right, as in a kind of free-roaming role, and you play two slightly deeper central midfielders rather than one as an attacking midfielder and one as a box-to-box midfielder. I think the reason why Watford enjoyed those periods of control was because Arsenal struggled to play through the lines in midfield, because Xhaka and El Nene would pick up the loose ball and the distance between them and Ozil and them and Mkhitaryan and them and Iwobi was so great, or they were playing a long ball to Aubameyang, which has maybe a 10-20% of succeeding, chance of succeeding, that actually Watford were able to win the ball back quite quickly just because the balance of the team wasn't quite right. And I think you contrast that to the Milan game where you had Wilshere and Ramsey as both as this kind of double pivot kind of role, and then Ozil out wide. I thought the balance looked a little bit better. Is that something, Josh, that you would agree with, or do you feel that the 4-2-3-1 is the better formation to go forward with?
No, I think the 4-3-3 is better. And honestly, I don't know if I see that much of a difference between the formation and just who the personnel are, because usually with our midfield, the formation is really figurative.
Yeah, people just that is true.
But in terms of, I thought our midfield performance against AC Milan was the best midfield performance I've seen. And I'd have to rack my brain to think of one that holds up. Maybe when we played Tottenham at home and Xhaka and Ramsey combined to shut down their midfield. But I think it was a fantastic midfield performance. And I thought it all came down to who they had in there. And like you said, that double pivot, having one on each side, was fantastic. And then Xhaka in between them, I thought it was... But again, I think that comes more down to the personnel than to the formation itself. But I mean, the athleticism is the key with establishing that balance, and I don't think that the 4-2-3-1, especially with the El Nini and Xhaka, has that same point.
All I was going to say was the midfield performance that I remember most vividly is Cazorla and Coquelin away at Manchester City a few years back. They were both rock solid, and I just shed a few tears, but let's carry on.
Oh, Cazorla. Man, I do miss that guy. We'll move into the attacking midfield positions then. We'll start with Alex Iwobi, because I think he's probably the most divisive figure in Arsenal circles at this moment in time. Josh, what did you make of poor old Iwobi's performance?
I've been so harsh on him this year, and it's crossed into the point where I just feel bad for him, because no matter how bad he plays, he'll just keep playing. Arsene Wenger just keeps throwing him out there, like what he's doing is fine, and I'm sure he realizes as a professional that what he's doing isn't okay. But it's just like, how many times are you going to send him out there and have him play inadequately and not up to the level that we require before you realize that he really needs to hit the reset? He needs to go out on loan. He needs to have a sit. He needs to do something different, because he's still young enough that we shouldn't be saying, oh, he's not worth it, we should sell him. But you don't want to keep putting that off. At some point, they need to do something about this, because he's not getting any better. If anything, he's getting worse. And against Watford, I mean, his good intentions often go unanswered, because he doesn't follow through with them. He doesn't seem to... I don't know if he just doesn't... If he panics. But I mean, you can tell what he wants to do. It just never comes off.
Yeah, I don't know if it was one of you two guys, but somebody tweeted out saying Iwobi is the definition of nearly.
Yeah, that was me.
In the sense that he's just so, like, everything he tries was just so close to being good. It just doesn't quite come off. And somebody floated this idea on Twitter a few months ago, and I quite like it, of just trying him in a slightly deeper midfield role, because he does have the feet for it. he does have the awareness, and he's an incredibly intelligent player. You can see he sees the field really well. His vision is excellent. His passing, for the most part, is good, unless if he really tries to drill it into the penalty area and he kind of loses his way a bit. And I wonder if by starting him a little bit deeper, you take away that element of Nearly, where, because he's not asked to play those really difficult crosses or passes that he kind of tries too hard on, and he's just asked to control the game, something that he can do really well. Henry, what did you make of his performance?
Yeah, as you said, I agree once again with everything that you guys have said. He sees the pass, it's a case of execution with him. But I think he could benefit from the fact that these Premier League games from now on are so pointless. I think you'll see youngsters come in like Nketiah and Reece Nelson, and they'll get time. But I think this is a perfect time for him, or for Arsene Wenger, just to come up and say to him, right, go and do what you want now. There's nothing riding on this. The pressure's all off. Just go and play. This is the perfect time, I think, for him to try new things. I mean, when what you just suggested there, as soon as you said that, do you want to know what came to my mind? Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, for no good reason whatsoever. I mean, Oxlade-Chamberlain is more direct and is a much better player at driving into space, but I think Iwobi is the far superior player in terms of connecting with players on the ball. So I'd like to see that, because essentially he would be another Jack Wilshere-type player in my eyes. I quite like that idea.
I will say, I think he was used in that capacity when we lost to Watford, which that was one of the few times where I've actually defended him, because I thought he did a really good job in that capacity despite the loss. He played kind of a pivot role because nobody else was doing it that game, so I think he kind of just appointed himself the pivot. But it worked out well. My only concern with that is we have so many people wanting to play that role.
Yeah.
I don't know how you push him back there when Maitland-Niles wants to play it and he can't get in there. It's tough, but something definitely needs to change because it's not working.
I mean, and that's one of the reasons why the more and more I think about it, Andy, the more and more I like the idea of Maitland-Niles being a permanent right back. Just like, yeah, right, we're just going to solve one problem, kill two birds with one stone by moving you there. So I really like that.
I do think you're right. Arsenal have got, is it eight games left in the Premier League, something like that. Wenger can say to these players like Iwobi and, say, Welbeck if he plays, although while he's playing in the Europa League, he might not. But other players like that on the fringes, maybe Maitland-Niles get some games, maybe Onene get some games, maybe even Nelson and Nketiah and what have you. Wenger can go and say to them, right, you've got 6, 7, 8 games, however many it is, go and prove to me that you are deserving of more game time next year. Go and make your case. You've got a few weeks, a couple of months. Go and show me why you're worthy of being in the starting lineup. Last year, I remember when Iwobi broke into the team for the first time. It was about 2 years ago this time, and he had a brilliant month, 2 months to close the year. And when the next season started, he was in the starting 11, and he got an injury quite early on, and then he came back from the injury, and confidence began to seep away from him because his form deteriorated quite dramatically. But initially, he broke into the team and stayed in the first 11 because of the month to 2 months that he closed out the year with some excellent performances. I think Wenger can very well motivate these similar type players like Iwobi, like Welbeck, like Nelson and Nketiah and Maitland-Niles by saying, look, you've got a month, 2 months, go make your case, go and prove to me why you deserve to be playing next year.
I mean, you could add Rob Holding and Callum Chambers possibly to that list as well. I mean, Macy is more of a long shot, but Rob Holding and Callum Chambers, excuse me, played at centre-back together for a period yesterday. I was like, oh my goodness, what is this? I quite liked it. I mean, it was 20 minutes, granted, and take everything with a pinch of salt, but there were a lot of nice things to take away from yesterday. Not positive things, nice things.
Yeah, no, I agree. Let's move on to the two new boys and then we'll come back to Mesut Ozil. Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang, they again showed off their Borussia Dortmund connection, each scoring a goal which was assisted by the other one. Josh, do you think that they can be the creative and attacking fulcrum of Arsenal moving forward? I'm kind of looking beyond this year as well as for the remaining couple of months.
Yeah, I would hope so. I mean, Aubameyang spoke after the match about how he was kind of having trouble finding his rhythm whenever he first came here, because he'd play a match, then he'd go 2 weeks without playing, and then he'd play again. And that's really disjointing for a player that's used to playing, as he said, every 3 days. Yeah. So I'm not worried about him. I'm even less worried about Mkhitaryan because, you know, there was an opinion that came out after the match that Mkhitaryan kind of floats on the fringes, I believe was the words that they used. He floats on the fringes of games and doesn't really impact them. And I think that what makes Mkhitaryan so special is that even when he's not maybe at his creative best, or, you know, against Tottenham, he was pretty poor. But even whenever he's not doing the finer things right, he's still a really hard worker who's not going to slack off, and he's always fighting for the ball. And like I said last podcast, I think that the big perk that he brings is pulling some of the spotlight away from Mesut Ozil, because he's got so much talent that defenders have to contend with, and he's, like you said last time, he's so much busier than Ozil, and that makes him stand out, I think, from a defensive standpoint, which gives players like Ozil, who don't want to stand out, who want to have that element of secrecy, it gives them the opportunity to have that. And I couldn't be happier with what Mkhitaryan's been able to do. Somebody jokingly, I assume it was a joke, tweeted out, "Would you trade back Mkhitaryan for Alexis?" And like 50 people responded. They all said, "Hell no." Not a single person was even considering, because Mkhitaryan's had such a big impact already, and he's just settling in. This isn't even, you know, I imagine there's still better to come from him, because he's going to settle in more. He's going to learn his teammates more. He's going to settle with Aubameyang more. He's only going to get better, and he's already this good. So I do think that they're a great duo to build around. Just really need to balance out what else goes around them.
Yeah, Henry, do you agree?
You might not agree with this opinion, but I think for a couple of years they'll be fine. I might have a FIFA career mode head on, but I would like to see us probably revert back to younger options moving forwards. I mean, I think they're approaching 30, if not 30, the pair of them. And that might just be me being naive and completely irrational. But I think for a couple of years, certainly, they can lead the line. With regards to their performances yesterday, I thought the goal and the assist kind of masked Mkhitaryan's overall performance. I thought he gave the ball away far too often. I think he was given man of the match by the official Arsenal Twitter account yesterday, but I didn't see it. I thought Elneny was far better in terms of an overall performance. And Aubameyang, I think he had two big chances and he scored one. So I think it's now three goals in five games that he's got for us now?
Be five or six, yeah.
Pretty good record. Doesn't matter how you look at it.
Six. I mean, yeah, even when Aubameyang was at Dortmund, he was kind of known for missing quite a lot of chances. The reason why he was so prolific was because his movement was so good that he just had so many chances. A little bit like Mohamed Salah, he's not a very good finisher, but his movement is so good that he gets so many chances that he can afford to not be a good finisher, because just by virtue of it being a numbers game, he's just going to have so many shots on goal from good positions that he's just going to score goals. And I think Aubameyang is very similar in the sense that he's just going to create chances for himself. And there were lots of near chances as well. You know, the one where he darted to the back post and Kolasinac tried to play it and it was just an inch away from him. And then the same thing, but on the other way, where Mkhitaryan played it in and the cross was blocked at the last minute. I think you saw the sharpness of his movement there in the penalty area where, I mean, they were both tap-ins and he would have scored and he would have had a hat-trick had they both gone right for him. You saw that his movement creates him chances. I do agree that their age is a little bit of a, I wouldn't say a concern, but just something to be wary of, you're not going to have them for 10 years. You may have them for maybe 3 or 4 years. But I think certainly for the near future, they're more than good enough to start building around, especially now that Mesut's sticking here as well.
I think it's good. They can kind of serve as this like bridge while we transition, because they're two really good superstars to build around. And since you've got Ozil locked in, that's three really good superstars, all of whom are at or near 30. Actually, I don't think any of them have hit 30 yet, but they're getting there. I mean, obviously, we're going to need younger players when we go forward. But for right now, I think they're exactly what we need in the moment. So I agree. We need to get younger, but for, especially with the whole Arsene Wenger potentially leaving, those are three really good guys to have there to attract other players while with Wenger not being able to after he assumedly leaves at some point.
they are on that. I do wonder if their age actually suggests, or when they were initially signed, for example, I thought, oh, I wonder if Wenger will stay for another year then, because this is his last push, and we're just going to throw everything, and we don't care what age the players we're signing are, we're just throwing the best players we can all in the pot and trying to make one last push for the title. Obviously, things have changed since January, and maybe that has shifted the perspective a little bit, but I do think that potentially the reason why, because Arsenal don't really sign players over the age of 27, 28. It's not in their DNA. They don't like to do it. Wenger certainly doesn't like to do it. I wonder if it was this, well, let's just have one last go at trying to win a title. So maybe Wenger will stay for next year. But that's pure speculation on my part. The final player we haven't talked about is Mesut Ozil. Again, it was a funny one. It was another kind of quiet Mesut Ozil, and then he pops up every now and then with a wonderful pass or cross or whatever it may be. Henry, do you think that Ozil, after probably a month or so of really going off the boil and back to his anonymous worst, do you think he's beginning to get back to his best?
Possibly. I think it's still too early to tell. I mean, we've said it all episode that this should be taken with a pinch of salt. But again, much like Mustafi, I don't want to hear his name. With Mesut Ozil, I want to hear his name sparingly, and I always want to hear it associated with a goal or a big chance. Because that's, again, when I know, okay, he's really turned it on. I mean, I think we can all establish at this point, he's a fantastic player. He has his blemishes, of course. He's not always involved. His defensive output from a British standpoint, if you will, isn't good enough. But just learn to accept him as he is. He's this player who, in my opinion, will turn it on for 5 minutes, and sometimes that's enough.
Yeah, as against Huddersfield, that's one of the best 5 minutes I've seen a player have probably in my life. It was just remarkable. You're right, he can turn it on for 5 minutes. Like, I mean, the touch for his chance, the one that he should have scored that he missed, the touch was just unbelievable.
That's what I mean, is in, he's just incredible. Capable of those little moments. No one else is capable of that on the pitch.
Yeah, it was as soon as he did it, I was like, oh, my
had
word.
Had that gone
that
in, that they would have played that alongside the Norwich goal and the Thomas Rosicky goal. That goal would have been alongside it. Or alongside them.
The touch was fantastic. You were talking about his defensive output, Henry. Do you... obviously, this isn't going to happen, but would you be tempted to not play him on Thursday, for example, when Arsenal are going to be defending a lead?
No, I'm playing him because I'm thinking of the Ostersunds game where we went and conceded two goals, and I think it's not outside the realm of possibility that we do so again on Thursday, and then we'll need him to conjure up a moment of magic once again to see us through. So he starts.
I was just trying to poke the bear a little bit.
I'm not even going to entertain that idea.
Josh, would you?
I'm going to go ahead and take the contrarian viewpoint and say I would actually see a lot of logic in not starting him, but having him ready to go in case it goes bad. Because you can shake your heads no, but
we haven't got a game for like 3 weeks after this.
No, that's fair, but I will say, we do have to defend a lot, and when Ozil gets exposed, it's whenever he's asked to do beyond his comfort zone of tasks, which includes defending, which includes withstanding pressure, which includes playing deeper down the field. So if you wanted to...
Running.
Say, yes, that too. So if you wanted to... sit him and maybe play some of your higher effort guys all together, I would see the logic in that. I'm not saying it's the greatest idea in the world, but if they brought out that starting 11, you had Ramsey and Wilshere and Xhaka and Mkhitaryan and all these guys that are really effort-based and no Ozil, I would sort of shrug and say, I get why he's doing this. It could go wrong, but that's why you save him on the bench in case it does and he needs to come on and change things.
Yeah, there is a degree of logic to it. Again, it's not going to happen, is it? Because Wenger adores Mesut Ozil. But in all fairness, it's exactly what happened against Chelsea earlier in the year when Welbeck and Iwobi played either side of Lacazette, and Arsenal drew 0-0, and they put in an industrious clean sheet performance, and that was without Mesut Ozil. We will have to see what happens. The last thing I'd like to talk about in regards to this game, Henry, relates to Reece Nelson and his apparent bib-throwing spat on the sideline. The report is, for those that don't know, Nelson was quite frustrated that he didn't get on the pitch off the bench with Wiltshire and Danny Welbeck coming on in place of Henrik Mkhitaryan and Alex Iwobi, respectively. My fear, really, is that Nelson may be thinking the same thing as what Marcus McGuane thought earlier in the year. Marcus McGuane signed for Barcelona in January. I'll just give you a quote from after his move, just to give you an insight into what he was thinking when he made the decision. This is McGuane speaking. He said, "I was getting frustrated by lack of opportunities. It is good to train, but I did not want my performance to plateau and stay at the same level. This step, the step moving to Barcelona, made sense. There's no grudge, but I felt the best thing was to find another way. If you want to be at a place to develop and get first team football, maybe you have to look elsewhere than Arsenal." Does that make you worry, Henry, for the future of Reece Nelson at Arsenal, especially given that his contract expires in the summer of 2019?
Of course. We've talked about the fact that we have plenty of central midfield options, but it seems that we don't really have wingers who we are excited about, in terms of we seem to have a lot of inverted wingers and central players, but no one who really excels on the flanks. Part of me reacted to that yesterday. Oh, actually, I can see where you're coming from. But also a part of me was thinking, grow up. I mean, in terms of the fact that we have the Europa League, which is our priority. And I think it's really important, or it was important yesterday, to help Danny Welbeck and Jack Wilshere tick over, because they're players who have had so many injuries over the years as well. I mean, the Shkodran Mustafi one, I think had he not come off, I think we would have seen Nelson or Nketiah come on. And whilst we said earlier in the show that players like Nelson and Nketiah are likely to get games in the Premier League later this season, granted we get through against, we beat AC Milan on Thursday, I don't think he'll play the next Premier League game, seeing as after the Europa League, I think we have a couple of weeks off, and then it's again a case of giving players minutes to help them tick over, keep them fresh, keep them sharp. But I think certainly the last six games of the season, you'll see him. I mean, I think looking back at the FA Cup, one of the drawbacks of going out so early is that he doesn't get as many minutes as he should have, theoretically.
Yep.
But obviously, my mind goes back to the Benfica game at the beginning of, what was it, August in the Emirates Cup, and he lit the place up. So hopefully we can tie him down. But it's a case of, it's that horrible balance of, he is good enough, but unfortunately there are players who are better than him at the moment. His chance may come, but I think I'm concerned with losing him, but I think right now we can't be too concerned with that. We have too many other things to worry about.
Josh, what do you think?
Yeah, I was actually really bummed when we lost Marcus McGuane, because I didn't understand why he didn't get more chances when we gave Joe Willock so many, especially because McGuane was touted as this midfielder that everybody wanted, this defensive guy who knew how to make the tackles hurt and knew how to turn the play around. As far as Reece Nelson, I don't have a lot of pity for him. I do worry that he might leave, but like Henry said, just grow up. Like, you had a lot of chances early in the season, and honestly, he didn't do very well, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm.
But if you really want to be upset about it, you could have done more with those chances, and he'll get more chances, especially later in the season. This was one match. We talked about it before the show, but when Mustafi had to get taken off because of his injury, I really do think that messed up the substitution plans, which might have included getting him or Eddie Nketiah on. And I don't see why he should be upset that he missed out on one game. It's a bummer because he could be playing with the under-23s. And I think the same about Eddie Nketiah is, would you rather have them sitting on your bench where they're not going to play, or playing with the youth setup? And I'd obviously rather have the youth setup, but I mean, you gotta be patient. Everybody's gotta be patient at this point. It's worrying because we've seen how talented he is, but I don't know. I'm not completely sold on him being the next great thing. You have a long way to go before you're just anointed as the chosen one. So, yeah, I mean, that's my take on it, at least.
I mean, what I will say is that he was being played out of position whenever he played in Europa League games. Yeah. But the Marcus McGuane point, it goes back to what I said earlier in terms of we have so many players in that central position, and it's just a case of sometimes you're going to let people slip through the cracks. I mean, I know they rate Ben Sheaf highly as well. I think it's probably likely you'll see Joe Willock and or Ben Sheaf go out on loan again next season, simply because we have so many options there. And it seems likely that, or you hope that we'll add another strong midfielder into that group during the summer. So it's a great, it's one of those, is it a good problem to have or is it a bad problem to have? I can't really decide, simply because we know we have all this fantastic talent because they're doing very well in their respective league at the moment as well. But it's a case of, if you're good enough, you should be able to show it in training. But the thing is, I say that, I don't actually know what they do in training. Are they actually able to really showcase that they're superior players than who's already playing? It's a tough one to debate, simply because I don't know them well enough as players to be able to say he should be playing guaranteed every single game. It's just so hard, but it's life. I mean, Chris Willock is the same. I mean, what were we going to do? At the time, we had Walcott. We had Lucas Perez, I believe, before he went, and then obviously Perez went as well. I mean, power to them. If they don't see a route to the starting 11, go ahead and go somewhere where you're going to play. I mean, the one thing I would say to Arsenal on that point from a business perspective is I believe Liverpool do a fantastic job with their youngsters of capping how much they earn a week. I'm not actually sure of this information, by the way, but I also believe that they insert buyback clauses with a lot of their youth players that they sell. I believe if we protect ourselves in that way, then there's no reason as to why having so much squad depth should be viewed as a negative, not only as a positive.
Yeah, it's the balance. You make a good point about the potential recruitments as well. It's the balance of having experienced squad depth, but also allowing your youngsters to be that squad depth at the same time, and how much do you trust them to be able to come in for the odd Premier League game here and there? And does Wenger see Nelson, for example, as a player who could play 5 or 10 Premier League games and be the reserve for, say, Mesut Ozil or for even Danny Welbeck? Or, you know, so now that Theo Walcott's gone, for example, who would have been considered as squad depth, does that mean that Wenger sees Nelson as that depth? Is that, does that mean he's at that quality or not? I don't know.
It'll be interesting this summer in terms of what we do, especially with the forward ranks. It sounds like Joel Campbell is likely to move on. I would assume that Lucas Perez is also going to move on as well. It wouldn't surprise me if Iwobi goes out on loan. And then that leaves us pretty short. I would assume that Nketiah is going to go out on loan, considering we'll have Aubameyang, Lacazette, and I assume Welbeck all ahead of him in the pecking order. So I'd assume he'd go out on loan. And I honestly, there's times where I've been thinking about this recently. There are times where I think, screw the loans, just play him. Throw him in the fire, and that's the best way to learn. But then there are situations like this where you think, it's the only way that he's actually likely to get really significant minutes, valuable minutes. Let him go. Let him learn. I wrote an article not too long ago about this. It needs to be the right team, though, because Arsenal loanees have had so many troubles this season in terms of game time. I believe the situation is currently improving, but that's something that also needs to be looked into.
Yeah, I think you're very right. It's a very difficult balance to find. It's, you know, one that some managers do very well at and one that other managers don't do so well at.
Although, going back to Nelson, I think it's plausible that he could actually be a valuable member of the squad next season, considering what I just said in terms of Joel Campbell and Lucas Perez as such.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I mean, you look at Jose Mourinho, for example, he's very much criticised for his dealings of young players, but he's been more than willing to thrust McTominay straight into the heart of the Manchester United midfield over the last few weeks, and he's done very well as a result of it. So maybe, perhaps, Wenger could take a few tips from his old adversary. I mean, we will have to.
Keeping Ander Herrera at the team, all credit to him, and he's a good player. I'm being dead serious. I like Herrera. No.
No, and he looked good. He played. I watched the game against Liverpool, and he looked very good. He played very
solid
well.
And efficient.
We will take a break there because we have been rambling on about Watford and its many ramifications for some time. When we come back, we will look forward to Arsenal's inevitable, inevitable crumbling against AC Milan as they go peak Gunners and throw away a 2-0 lead. We'll see you in just a second. Hello and welcome back to the second part of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name's Andrew and with Henry and Josh like normal. And unfortunately, can't believe this, we didn't have the cojones to bring up Troy Deeney and his cojones remark and then his apparent absence of them on Sunday because he was terrible. Like, even irrespective of his penalty miss, he was just rubbish. It was so much fun to watch him flail about. I love like when Holding started on him, and because like Holding clearly went back to his Bolton roots in the Championship, whereas like, well, I'm used to playing against rough idiots who are actually rubbish at football. So
I mean, he went everything.
We apologize profusely for our lack of cojones references so far because well, it's just been not up to scruff really. I'm sure Troy Deeney would be very upset with us. Moving on, Arsenal have the small matter of a 2-0 lead to defend against AC Milan on Thursday night. I have said many times on this podcast and in various articles that it would be peak Arsenal to go and throw this away. Henry, before we delve into this properly, do you actually think that Arsenal might throw this away, or do you think they'll be all right?
Let's just put it this way. I'm very nervous. I'm very scared. I've got in my notes here, just win. I don't care how, just win. Just, I don't really want to add anything more. Just win the game. I don't care whether it's ugly. I'd prefer it not to be. Just win the game. I don't care how you do it. I prefer that we were defensively resolute, but this is Arsenal Football Club. That is not going to happen. Not for, well, you can't even say the Watford game they were defensively resolute. Let's just.
They were defensively less vulnerable.
Okay, we'll roll with that. But let's. We've hopefully got some more confidence and some more swagger considering the last couple of results. So let's take that into Thursday and hopefully come out on top.
Yeah. What are you expecting for Thursday, Josh?
I'm shockingly not worried, and I feel like I should be, and I keep trying to get myself to worry, but I'm just not. I think it's just because, I mean, AC Milan pressed us pretty hard there for a while, but they really lack speed. And speed is usually what I think kills Arsenal the most because our defenders get torched. And without that risk, there's a significant less threat that they're going to get beat badly. Because, I mean, as long as our defense keeps its shape, it's usually pretty good. Now, against AC Milan, they kept their shape really well. And that all comes down to the fact that I don't think that AC Milan has the resources to stretch that shape or pull it out or anything. And I keep trying to introduce worry and where I think things could go wrong. And it really bothers me that I'm actually not worried at all. I think this is going to be a pretty steady, easy does it game. And yeah, that's all I have on it. I think
your point about speed is very important, that Milan did look slow on Thursday, and actually they made Arsenal look very quick. You know, even the likes of Wilshere and Ramsey looked pretty sharp in central midfield, and admittedly they're not the slowest of players, but they're no burners. They're not, you know, they're certainly not extremely rapid, but Milan made them look so on Thursday. And their wingers as well, Suso and Calhanoglu or Chan Howell. Yeah, Calhanoglu, the free kick dude.
They're both banned.
Yeah, they're both those kind of inverted wingers. They, you know, they play right foot on the left and the left foot on the right, and they like to come inside and they're quite cute. But actually, Arsenal are pretty good at dealing with those kind of players. It's the burners on the outside that they really struggle with. Your Leroy Sané's, your Armand Traore,
your Jefferson Monteros.
Your Jefferson Monteros, yeah. It's those kind of guys who really cause Arsenal problems, and Milan don't really have that play. In fact, that version of the play they have is Fabio Barini, who doesn't scare me at all because he's pants. The thing that scares me the most is Arsenal's ability to capitulate. And I fear that if Milan score the first goal, then that there will be a 5-10 minute period after that first goal where everything looks very shaky, and Milan could very well score two, like Östersund did, could score two in quick succession, and then suddenly the game's turned on its head.
I think the fans will play a really big part. I think it's a sellout, and I think if Milan do score, and if they score first, there's a tendency at the Emirates where if the opposition scores first, nerves come in and hostility comes into play. I can understand that, but if that happens, you've got to get behind the team because we've said it since August, practically. This is the priority. This is everything. We cannot be knocked out of this competition. We're Arsenal Football Club. So the fans, as cliche as it sounds, I think they'll play a really important role, especially if we go behind at some point early on.
Yeah, and actually, I think they will. Just because, like you said, this is now... essentially, every Europa League game that Arsenal play between now and the end of the year will be the most important game of the season up until that point. And I think because of that, I think the fans realise that they'll be like, you know, for one game, let's just ignore the difficulties with the board and with Wenger, and let's overlook them for now, and let's just for 90 minutes get behind the team and fully support this team. I remember in the FA Cup semi-finals and final last year, it was a very similar feeling of where Arsenal fans were just like, well, we're just going to support these guys just for 90 minutes because even with the troubles going on elsewhere, just because, you know, we really want to win the FA Cup. And I think the same thing's very true for the Europa League this season. Josh, I guess the big question I want to ask really is, how defensive would you set up? Would you really look to protect the 2-0 lead, or would you actually first 10-15 minutes really go for the jugular, try and get that third goal and try and kill the tie before it ever really gets started?
I like the approach that we took in the first leg, where we did kind of play defensively, but then we were quick to strike, and I don't see why you'd alter from that. I mean, to touch on the speed again, you can expect to play that way. You can expect to just sort of absorb the pressure, and then once you get it, you can beat them on the break when they're out of position. I don't know why we'd need to alter that or take any sort of special approach to the game. Obviously, I'd rather err on the side of defense than I would trying to get out ahead of them, because then you put yourself at a higher risk of surrendering that first goal, which, like you said, you really, really don't want to do, especially as Arsenal Football Club. But yeah, I would do the same thing you did. I mean, it sounds so simple, which with Arsenal, nothing's ever simple. but if you can just absorb it and then strike and cause them that pressure on the counter, then I don't see why this can't be as easy of a game as I want to believe it's going to be.
Yeah. Henry, do you agree?
Yeah. I mean, it's almost a case of we need to jab, 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 and then possibly give a right hook. I think we need to there's a part of me that thinks we need to let them dictate the game at first to see how they're going to play, whether they're going to be standoffish or whether they're really going to come out and try and press us and really put us under pressure. Because obviously the onus is on them to come here and score two goals at the bare minimum. And whilst I'm always confident that we'll concede, I'm usually just as confident that we'll score, for the most part.
Yeah.
So
I mean, this is the game that Aubameyang would have been perfect for, wouldn't he? Really, in terms of you look at the like you said, the onus is absolutely on Milan to come and create things, and they are gonna, especially if it's 0-0 at half time and it's early in the second half, they're gonna have to start pouring forward a little bit. And there will be spaces on the break for Arsenal to take advantage of.
I mean, Danny Welbeck, I hope he puts in a similar performance as he did in the first leg. Run those channels. There'll be plenty of space, you'd think, because obviously their fullbacks will have to be more adventurous, because as you say, they like to play with the inverted wingers. They play, by the sounds of it, by what you've just said to me, I will claim now that I'm not an AC Milan tactics expert. I don't watch enough of them to ever claim to be so. But by the sounds of what you just said, they play in a similar fashion to us from an attacking perspective. Inverted wingers, the width coming from the fullbacks. So if Welbeck can exploit that space, use his physicality, use his athleticism, again, from him, I just want a 6 or a 7 performance. Run your heart out. Try and score. Try and score. I want a Danny Welbeck performance. I want a Sir Alex Ferguson Danny Welbeck performance.
Yeah, I agree. I think we'll get one. Welbeck does tend to turn up for the big game. He is a big game player. He likes the big stage, very much like Aaron Ramsey. He tends to perform his best when it really matters most. He did so in the FA Cup last year, and he did so against Milan last week as well. He was excellent, and I think if we get a similar performance from him this week, then Arsenal will be well on their way to winning the tie. The reason why I asked the question about going for it early on is because I would be extremely tempted for the first 10-15 minutes just to go hell for leather and just press really high up the pitch and just absolutely bomb them and see if you can nick that goal. Because if you can nick that goal and go 3 goals up, suddenly, even for a capitulation very akin to what Arsenal have done in recent weeks, it will be quite extraordinary to see them do so again with a 3-goal lead. Obviously, there are risks attached to that, but that's just me. I always think Arsenal play best when they're aggressive and when they're on the front foot. And I think in the first 10-15 minutes, if they can be that and perhaps nick a goal, then it might be worth taking the risk.
I hope that they don't come out like they did against Östersunds in the second leg and just... I do want them to emphasize defense, but not to the point that we're doing what Chelsea did against City and we've just got a bank of 5 and a bank of 6 saying you're not going to get through this because this is Arsenal. They will get through this. Somehow they will. So I disagree. Yeah. I don't think we should just go balls to the wall and try to nick that goal early, because I would hate to see us do that and then somebody surrenders possession and then they get it and they score in like the 9th minute and all of a sudden shit. It wouldn't be Xhaka because he never does that.
What about going cojones to the wall?
We get cojones to the wall, I could handle. Balls to the wall, I could not. it'd be fun to do that, and it'd be even more fun if we could get that goal, but I don't think the risk involved repays the potential reward, because then you still got to sit back and defend.
No, that's fair enough. That's more than fair enough. It's certainly something that I would do, but I certainly recognise that there's a bit of risk attached to it, and it's probably what other people would be more hesitant to adopt. Again, it's just the makeup of this team is far better suited to being on the front foot. And like you said, when Arsenal set up in banks of 4 and banks of 5 and banks of 6, whatever it is, I mean, they're not banks, are they? They're kind of mild slopes, really, because the opposition can walk up them relatively easily when it's Arsenal. It's not like the Jose Mourinho park the bus. Arsenal kind of park the hatchback, really, don't they? Just...
I thought you were going to say unicycle then.
<Brazil. laughs> Yeah, or unicycle. Yeah, either will do. So certainly the defensive approach is one that may not cause Arsenal actually that much help, but definitely if they can provide a threat on the break, which they did last week and they can do again on Thursday, then that will help their cause, because it will throw that element of doubt into the back of the AC Milan players' minds, where they're not quite so willing to make that lung busting run forward because they're aware of the, you know, what's going the other way. Is there anything else you want to touch on this game before we move on to score predictions?
How would you set up? What would your formation be?
I would set up. I would do the exact same.
Did Iwobi start in the first leg?
No,
it was Xhaka, Wilshere, Ramsey, Mkhitaryan, and Mesut White.
I got Welbeck confused then. It's Aubameyang that can't play in the Europa League. Apologies.
Yeah, no, I would do exact same. I mean, one thing is Mustafi may or may not be fit. We don't know. It's a groin injury. Wenger's not said a time frame yet. If he is out and Bellerin is out, do you play Holding at centre-half and Chambers at right-back? Do you play Chambers at centre-half and Maitland-Niles at right back? Do you play Mertesacker with Koscielny at centre half?
Not Mertesacker, because he'll be throwing up on the freaking pitch if he has to play a game. I wouldn't mind I'd rather see Callum Chambers in there somewhere just because of how good he is in the air, and we're going to need that. I wouldn't mind seeing a back three if Mustafi can't go, putting Koscielny, Holding, and Chambers back there. But then you really got to stretch because you don't have any.
Who do you sacrifice in the midfield then? Wilshire? Yeah.
I don't really have an issue with who plays at who plays really at the moment, because I'm at a weird stage right here, right now, where I'm comfortable with all of them playing. We saw that Chambers did well at right back against them previously. I mean, considering what we said earlier, let's give Maitland-Niles more get back. Keep him happy. We know Koscielny's going to start because obviously he rested the players who are more susceptible to injury on the weekend. Yeah, that is right, on the weekend. But yeah, I'd be happy with whatever, really. I'd prefer Maitland-Niles, but I'd be happy with whatever.
I mean, you make a good point on Chambers that he's a big lad, so certainly aerially, if you have two centre-halves and you have Chambers at right-back, you essentially have three centre-halves on the pitch.
And Danny Welbeck in front as well.
And Milan.
And Xhaka.
And Danny Welbeck. And Xhaka. And if you've got Kolasinac at left-back as well, not Monreal. And Milan did bombard the Arsenal box with a number of crosses, not just from set-pieces, but from open play as well. They crossed the ball a lot, so Arsenal will have to deal aerially with the threat that Milan pose. Wenger did also say, though, that Monreal may possibly be fit, so I wonder if a back five is a possibility. If he plays Monreal at centre-half with Kolasinac at left-wing-back, that may
it's
be something
that I'm
wants
thinking
to do.
About right now. You have something that's working. Right now, you've got the confidence, you've got the swagger. Don't interrupt. Don't impede. Don't impede too much.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Make the necessary changes, but don't make unnecessary changes. Simple.
I agree. Right, score prediction, Josh. What do you... We'll go both, obviously, score on the night, but also your aggregate score as well. I know they're going to be essentially the same, but...
I think we draw 1-1 and we take the aggregates in 3-1.
Henry?
I'm going to show some cojones. I'm going to say 1-0 Arsenal.
1-0! A clean sheet!
Oh, that was horrible.
A clean sheet?
Ospina's going to be in goal, you know, your favourite.
yeah, 1-0 Arsenal. Screw it.
Yeah, there's no chance Arsenal can
hey, we said we said that about the first leg, didn't we?
Yes. No.
I believe. Petr Cech saved the penalty. Go. I believe in our goalkeepers and our defence now.
I will go 2-1.
Oh, that would be horrible.
And Arsenal scrape through in a real nail biter where they Milan go 1-0 up, then Arsenal score, then Milan score. and the last 5 minutes is absolute agony. That's what I'm going for. But Arsenal scrape through. I do think Arsenal will scrape through. Did you have it on the score predictions? I mean, we've not been keeping tallies at all because we just assume we're wrong. But did you two guess 3-0?
I guess 4-0.
Oh, because I guessed 3-1. I thought one of us was right.
If you average us out, I guess we were kind of close to 3-0.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I mean, well, if Troy Deeney could score a blooming penalty, if only he had some
play. Get it in, Andy. Get it in. I would have been a better analogy than that.
I would have been spot on. Not the wisest turn of phrase from Henry.
I'm gonna. Yeah,
I think.
Thanks, Andy.
I think on that note, we should we should probably sign off, shouldn't we? there is. I should point out there is no game for the
hiatus,
rest of March after Thursday. So yeah, so our kind of post game, pre game rhythm that we've been in may be slightly disrupted. We will get in contact with you guys through Twitter and stuff like that when we have a plan of what we're going to do. We've not talked about it at all. So we ourselves need to think about what we're going to do, and then we'll obviously relay that to you through the many social media and online channels. thank you very much for listening. We will certainly see you after the Milan game. I hope that it is a wonderful game in which Arsenal dismantle their Italian counterparts. I fear that it may be slightly more nervous affair, shall we say. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you later. Goodbye.